from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to the Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to the Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll find out about grand opening festivities that'll be celebrating the completion of our cultural trail.
I'll get a preview of the Sinatra musical review, My Way, that the Actors Theater of Indiana is producing.
And I'll chat with booking agent Jeff Mace. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The project that began as a way to use walking, running, and biking trails to connect urban arts districts has reached its long-anticipated conclusion. The grand opening of the Indianapolis Cultural Trail, a legacy of Gene and Marilyn Glick, is coming up on May 10th and 11th. Sharon Gamble invited Cultural Trail Executive Director Karen Haley and Public Art Project Manager Mindy Taylor Ross to our studios to find out about the big celebration.
Karen, I know you weren't there at the inception of the Cultural Trail, but take us back to what the original vision of the Cultural Trail was. What was it meant to do or be?
Sure, that's a great question. So Brian Payne, CEO and president of Central Indiana Community Foundation, is the founder of the trail, and he's the gentleman who envisioned what the trail would look like today. And really, the concept was, how can we connect the downtown cultural districts, five of them being downtown and the sixth one up at the north end of the Monon and Broad Ripple, and how can we connect those to encourage people to move between and among the cultural districts? And in doing so, I think it started from how can we just make a nice walk, nice bike ride to a $63 million world-class trail that is being looked at from all over the world as a model for how you can have urban connectivity and make it a beautiful journey along the way.
Because those two things are not always said in the same breath. There's certainly a very strong greenway or trails movement across the country, but the idea of connecting cultural aspects of a city is not that common, right?
Not that I'm aware of. And that's, you know, I think a lot of the questions that I get at Indianapolis Cultural Trail Incorporated when other cities call, it's how did you do this in an urban area? And I think that because we connect to the cultural amenities that we have downtown, the sporting amenities, the entertainment amenities, that's so unique to an urban setting as opposed to a residential setting or a more rural setting where you might see some more trails. That's what people call to say, how did you do this in the downtown of a city?
Especially in this city, which had the greatest number of cars per capita 100 years ago. We were Detroit before Detroit was. 96 auto manufacturing and assembling companies here. So people didn't walk. Everybody drove somewhere. So back engineering a trail, laying it on top of a city built around a car, was not easy.
Correct. And I think the what we don't talk about enough when we talk about the cultural trail is how forward-thinking it was for the city administration to say, yes, we're going to give a lane of traffic back to the pedestrian, back to the bicycle. And that when I have spoken around the country at different places and venues about the cultural trail, that's the number one question I get asked is, how did you get the city to say yes to this? And I think that's a testament to both the passion and the drive that Brian brought to bringing the trail to fruition, but also, looking at Mayor Bart Peterson was in office at the time, to the vision that they had to say, yes, we can do this. Because again, giving up that lane of vehicle traffic to give it back to the pedestrians and the bicycles to make a more connected, to make a more bicycle and pedestrian friendly downtown is really the biggest success of the entire trail, I think.
And then there's the a project of this scope spans more than one administration of city officials as well. So that's not an easy path either.
Exactly. And so the fact that it came into being under one administration, and the Ballard administration, Mayor Ballard is very supportive of bicycles, very supportive of connectivity. And he just said, let's keep making it happen. What can we do to help? We're not going to stand in your way. So I think, again, when you look at other cities that have a change of administration in the middle of such a big capital project, a big infrastructure project, the fact that it was virtually a seamless transition, and the Mayor Ballard is a huge fan of the trail. I mean, he loves getting out and riding it and talks about it all the time. And You know, I think that, again, is very rare and very unique to Indianapolis, that we were able to have that smooth transition in such a big pivotal project in downtown.
So where did this get down on it idea come from relative to the opening of the trail? Mindy, you're the Charles in charge of it.
Oh, yeah, semi with my co-producer, Gail Payne. You know, it was a brainstorming session. We have had a great kind of working committee that we've pulled together of civic leaders and stakeholders, you know, Indianapolis Downtown Incorporated, Visit Indy, Big Car, the Latino Youth Collective, members of all the cultural districts. And we had a big brainstorming session. We didn't want to call it a festival, and we didn't necessarily want to call it a celebration. And we ended up with these music themes, and Coolin' the Gang's Get Down On It just was the winner. It stuck, but it really came out of a community brainstorming session to invite people to get down on it, get down on the cultural trail. So.
And you kind of opened the door to suggestions, and you were flooded with ideas, crazy ideas?
Yeah, so we decided, you know, this is public space. This is an incredible piece of public infrastructure, a gift to the citizens. And we want people to, again, get down on it and learn how to use it. And we thought, what better way than to do an open call for programs? Bring us your ideas of what you would like to be doing or your organization would like to be doing out on the cultural trail that day. Learn how to use this space, learn how to take care of the space, and see all the great things that can happen in this space. And so we did. We received over 105 submissions from the general public for what they wanted to do, to get down and do that day.
Craziest idea?
Oh, craziest idea.
Or is it a tie?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, there's great things like there's a pyrotechnics group, a fire dancing group.
Cool.
Yeah, and they made the cut. They're in. They're going to be in White River State Park on the evening of May 11th, about 8 o'clock, for a pyrotechnics and fire show right before the first pop-up cinema happens in White River State Park at sundown. And while you're there, the other wonderful reaching thing that ended up happening, and I have to give total credit to the Fletcher Place neighborhood. This was their brainchild. We couldn't figure out how to make it happen in Fletcher Place with it being such a tight urban neighborhood. But also in White River State Park, there will be tethered hot air balloon rides.
Cool.
So head up, you know, 80 to 100 feet in the air and check out downtown to the east and to the west. You can get a great look at the White River.
Fantastic. The trail from the air. Love it.
Yeah.
Love
so it. There's great events. And, you know, I do the way we want everybody to start off the day on Saturday, May 11th, is we want everyone to meet on the trail at 10 a.m. We have a great partnership with IPS, with our public school system here in Indianapolis. And there are going to be four high school marching bands starting at the four corners of the trail. It'll be Tech over at Monon and 10th Street. Mm-hmm. It will be Crispus Attucks over on Indiana Avenue in St. Clair. Broad Ripple High School at Blackford Street and Vermont on the IUPUI campus. And then down in Fountain Square, it will be Shortridge. And we want people to grab an old umbrella and New Orleans style, decorate your umbrella, create your own parasol with your cause, your theme, whatever you want. Be funky, be creative, and come get down on the trail with these marching bands and march the trail to City Market, where we'll be kicking off Two Wheels, One City, IndyCog's festivities around cycling and kind of the cycling community here in the city. So we really want people to grab an old umbrella, decorate it, and get down on the trail at 10:30.
Love it, love it. You're doing some events the day before. There's kind of an official launch as well, an official welcome. The trail is finished. I picture the driving of the Silver Spike when the railroad was finished.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of that exciting a moment.
It is. We've had little mini ribbon cuttings as we've gone along, but this is it. Again, this is the reason for the big get down on it celebration. So yes, on Friday, May 10th at 3:45, everyone is invited to join us at the corner of Alabama and Market Street across kind of on the other side of Alabama from City Market and the City County Building for the ribbon cutting of the 8 miles. And so at 3:45, we will start the show. And when I say show, it's because it will not just be your talking head ribbon cutting. We will be infusing the event with art to show people all of the various things they'll be able to come out and experience the next day on Saturday.
Ah, sneak preview.
There'll be Fab Crew doing some massive immersive graffiti art on an Indigo bus. There'll be a little jazz with Becky Archibald, and there will be some spoken word and some other performances. I've probably already given too much away, but people should come.
It will be like no other ribbon cutting.
Yes. So that's 3:45 on Friday, May 10th.
Sneak out of work. It's tell your employer it's for the good of the community.
Exactly.
Which it is. So, Karin, I have to ask you a question. So you're going to be shifting some major gears in your responsibilities because you came in needing serious project management, negotiation skills. And then what changes for you when the trail is officially finished?
So I was actually brought on almost 2 years ago to Indianapolis Cultural Trail Incorporated, which is a new nonprofit formed to manage the trail and all aspects of the trail now that construction is finally complete. So from a day-to-day construction management standpoint, there was a very skilled and smart team that was doing all of that over the past, 8-10 years. And so my role in Cultural Trail Inc.'s role is to manage the trail. And what does that mean? And that's everything from making sure the snow and ice is cleared in the winter months, which I think is one of the best things that happens downtown. When it's cold, you can count on the trail being clear of snow and ice, to making sure the landscape is always looking pristine and enjoyable, to maintaining the art. There was several million dollars worth of art that was put on the trail as a part of construction, making sure that is maintained and functional and people are able to continue to enjoy that, but also doing ongoing programming. And I feel like this event on May 11th really sets the bar and sets the standard for what is possible on the trail. So is this something that people can expect every weekend when they come down? Maybe. That's to be determined.
Maybe not at the very beginning. Sure.
But, what can we constantly be doing to activate the trail, to make it a fun public space where people experience something new every time they're on it, whether it's new landscaping, whether it's new interaction with different types of people, whether it's a new art exhibit, whether it's a new piece of music that someone happens to pull up their drums and start playing. So I feel like this event, again, Get Down On It on May 11th, it's setting the bar. It's letting the public know, hey, the trail's done. It's open for business. Ride your bikes, play your music, do your art. And we'll be managing that from a programmatic standpoint as well.
Fantastic. I remember being in a brainstorming meeting. It's got to be 12 or 13 or 14 years ago now with Brian Payne.
Yeah.
And you know how brainstorming meetings are. Ideas were flying. And one of the ideas that I loved, that I'd still love to see come to fruition, is the idea of, is there a way to have a station or multiple stations on the trail where you can leave a message for the people who pass along after you? Maybe it's poetry, maybe it's sidewalk chalk, maybe it's art, instant graffiti or something like that. So and there were lots of other ideas as well about how to use performance art, how to use visual art along the trail. So what a thrilling prospect to say, the bricks and mortar part is complete.
Exactly.
But the trail is not done.
And to your point, the bricks and mortar are complete, and we thought about all of those things. Again, we couldn't do everything at Jump Street, but that's part of the fun of the trail. It'll be flexible and organic, and it'll, be responsive to what the community wants to see happen. But the infrastructure is there. We planned for power. We planned for water. There are these great, big, huge intersection plazas that are for function, but also to allow space for people to do their thing. So,
I know you've also encouraged arts organizations that are on or near the trail to collaborate with artists to put public art that promotes their events. I remember the exclamation point for the exhibition at the Eideljorg a few years ago that was about Native American, I believe it was their fellowships, and this great piece of public art that said something about the exhibit but also was art in and of itself, so lots of room for growth.
Yeah, and the arts organizations are really coming out on May 11th as well. So, in the Mass Ave district, the Indianapolis Arts Center will be there doing a Make It, Take It art tent. The IMA will be there with Who Is Ai Weiwei. The Children's Museum will have some of their Hot Wheels things down in that district as well. IRT is open, free to the public. Grab a drink, get a behind-the-scenes tour. There's great things going on at the State Museum where you can blast a stormtrooper. So, kids don't want to miss that for sure. And the Eideljorg with their guitars exhibit, they'll be out doing tattoos and all kinds of fun things. So, the arts organizations are really showing up for May 11th. And so they're bringing all their wares out to the trail, which is going to be great for people to have access.
And I believe the Historical Society is even open for free that day. So
yes.
Their contribution to the public celebration of the trail is open admission.
Come on. Yeah, a lot of people are doing that. It's great. The Rhythm Center is another one, free and open to the public. They'll have drums out on Washington Street.
Going forward, are there opportunities for volunteers?
We will definitely have opportunities for volunteers. I encourage people to go friend us on Facebook, find Indy Cultural Trail. The Indianapolis Cultural Trail Legacy of Gene and Marilyn Glick is the official name of our Facebook page. So I encourage you to friend us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. It's at inculturaltrail.org, or not .org, at inculturaltrail on Twitter. And we will make plenty of volunteer opportunities known mainly via our social media methods that we have available to us.
Sharon Gamble with Indianapolis Cultural Trail Executive Director Karen Haley and Public Art Project Manager Mindy Taylor Ross. Attend the ribbon cutting ceremony on Friday, May 10th, and the whole day of Get Down On It events on Sunday, May 11th. You can find out more at indieculturaltrail.org/getdownonit. And Sharon and I will be broadcasting live from noon to 1 p.m. on Saturday the 11th as part of Get Down On It. Come visit us on the trail in front of Indy Reads Books at 911 Mass Avenue.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. The Actors Theater of Indiana will swing to the tunes of the chairman of the board himself, Frank Sinatra, with their production of My Way. The musical review runs from May 10th through June 9th at the Studio Theater in Carmel. Travis DiNicola spoke with Don Farrell and Michael Dotson from ATI to find out more.
Michael, Don, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you guys.
Thanks. To see you, Travis.
And you are wrapping up your current season with one of my absolute favorites, Sinatra. How fun is that going to be?
My Way, a musical tribute to Frank Sinatra. I tell you, it's an iconic celebration of an icon of the great American songbook and the 20th century. And it's a true honor to be able to sing these amazing
gems of songs.
I mean, really, they're timeless.
Yeah.
And, you know, Frank's going to give us a little bit of time just to be able to borrow his songs. And you know, he really embodied what was cool, what was fun.
Mm-hmm.
He was a man's man. It's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of fun.
Now, have either of you guys done this particular show before? Or
I have. Yep. I have done this show before. Actually, this is the show that we chose, My Way, a musical tribute to Frank Sinatra, to start Actors Theater of Indiana back in 2005.
Okay.
And so there's been enough time.
Yeah.
Between when we started back in 2005 and moved here from New York City, and now we're in our new home at the Studio Theater at the Center for the Performing Arts, and it's a nice, wonderful, intimate space. When we had done it the first time, we did it at the Zionsville Performing Arts Center, a beautiful, large 1,200-seat venue there, and now we're going to be doing it in the intimate 200-seat theater, so it's going to have a nice new take, fresh take to it.
Yeah, a little bit more of a clubby feel.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
That goes well with Sinatra, of course.
Of course. I actually assisted on a production of the show about 4 years ago and wasn't in it, so I'm thrilled to actually be up on stage and get the chance to sing all these great hits.
Cool. So now tell me a bit about the show. It's pretty much a straight review, or is there a little bit of a storyline?
Yeah,
or?
You know, most reviews are generally, you know, they're about a songwriter or a composer of their group of songs, but of course this is about the artist who made all of these songs so famous. He's recorded over 1,300 songs. And, of course, his career is just, you know, we're going from film and the Tommy Dorsey days and then the big Capitol era albums and then, of course, the movies and television and film from here to eternity, so many different things. But, yeah, and, you know, it's great because this music is such a so it celebrates the music that he made so famous. And these songs are so well written.
Well, so many of the songs tell a story unto themselves.
That's really the thing.
I mean, there's always that story behind the song, and certainly with Sinatra, there's so many stories, you know, at different times and behind the songs. But each song, it seems, I mean, just one after the next, you can, you know, as you think back on whatever the song is, I mean, certainly, you know, My Way or Summertime, Summer Breeze, Summer Wind. There we go.
Summer Wind.
It took me a minute there. You guys were with me. Okay. You know, but each one sort of has like a compact story built within it.
It really does. And one of the great things that I'm excited about this production, because we have Michael Dotson, who's joining us from Los Angeles, from the West Coast. We have Mary Jane Waddell, who's joining us from the East Coast, from New York City. And then Cynthia Collins, my colleague, as well as myself. But these songs, there's so much depth to the lyric writing that it does. It does tell a story, and I think there's a certain amount of life experience that when you've lived through life, it adds so much texture and depth to the interpretation of the meaning.
That's
of
life.
It is.
Well,
that's life. And, you know, this song is packed with 57 songs. Mm-hmm. Of course, he sang 1,300. He recorded 1,300. So how do you really choose which ones to do?
But,
you know, they're Strangers in the Night. I've got the World on a String. My Funny Valentine. New York, New York, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Iconic, you know, end every Yankees game with that. Summer Wind, like you mentioned, Lady's a Tramp, Old Black Magic. I mean, the list just goes on and on. But it's truly an honor to be able to sing these songs.
Michael, what was it like for you getting this opportunity to sing some Sinatra? I'm guessing you were a Sinatra fan already, of course.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My dad, of course, having grown up in the prime time Sinatra era, listened to it all the time. So growing up, I heard it, that and Sammy Davis Jr. and Dean Martin around the house all the time. So as we were going through some of the music, I'm like, I don't remember that. Oh, yeah, I
there
do.
It is.
It's there right in the back of my head somewhere because I've heard so many of these before.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done a lot of different reviews, particularly in the last 5 or 10 years, and this music is so far and away heart. There's so much heart in each song.
What's the challenge, though, for you? I mean, some music is just difficult to sing because of complicated changes or of notes or such. I mean, with Sinatra, is it just because, I mean, there's so much history behind each song, or are there other more technical things that are a challenge for you?
I think that for this show, there's a lot of words.
Yeah.
Because it is so texturally rich that luckily it's not like some of the review shows I've done where you're literally singing every number. It's great because we get to feature each of our voices individually without backups necessarily in every song. So you do have to you have to have four leading players who can also back people up.
Sure.
So there's that transition, which is sometimes tricky. Because you don't. Sometimes you have people who can back up really well, but can't really hold their own by themselves. But the four of us, it's amazing.
The
rehearsal already.
Really nice.
It really is very nice, and that's a true testament to the songwriting. I mean, when you're dealing with lyricists like Johnny Mercer and Sammy Kahn, Julie Stein, Cole Porter, all Cy Coleman, it's written so well. It's like a Neil Simon play. It's effortlessly comes off the
material's so good.
The material is so good. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine, talking about getting ready to do the show, and how, oh my gosh, you're going to sing those great songs. I mean, that's type of music and material that I could never get tired of singing because it's just. It lives forever, and it's coming back. I mean, look at Michael Bublé, and there's a whole new resurgence to a new generation who's appreciating swing music and the wonderful writings of these composers and lyricists.
So I know it's like, you know, picking your favorite child, but I might ask you both, what's your favorite song from the show?
Oh, my goodness.
One for
Dawn?
My Baby. That's an awesome
One for
piece.
My Baby?
One for My Baby. I love that song.
Yeah.
So far, we've been in rehearsal for about a week, so, and we've pretty much blocked the show, so I'm pretty up on all of them. But the one that I think has a great hook for me is called Drinking Again.
I don't know if I know that one.
It's one that I didn't know.
Yeah.
But it's about a guy who's lost a girl, and he's taken solace in the bottle. And it's so, to me, as I'm singing it just seems so iconic, that image that we have of Frank Sinatra with a drink in his hand and a cigarette in the other hand, and just talking about his life.
The lead into that, there's a, you know, throughout this show there are quotes and stories about Frank and Frank's view on how style and a variety of different things to intersperse between the songs, but one of them leading up to this, when he was asked about singing and articulating lyrics, he goes, I don't know what other singers feel when they articulate lyrics. But if the song is about a lament about the loss of love, I get an ache in my gut. I feel the loss and I cry out the loneliness. Mm-hmm. And because he's been there and back. I mean, he has. I mean, look, think about all the comebacks that Frank Sinatra over the course of his life, mm-hmm. he was able to do. And that song, My Way, boy, mm-hmm. it's true. He did do it his way. And he was the boss. And he was, man, he was cool.
Well, this is going to be a great show. Looking forward to this very much. Running through June 9th. Oh, excellent. Good. May 10th through June 9th. Now, also, you've got some other things going on, Don, including some classes coming up.
We have some amazing, exciting classes. We've been doing this for the past 2 years now, where we have a music theater summer intensive. And it started on a small scale with myself and my two colleagues as educators, and it's grown. It grew last year, and we're growing even more this year. This year, we're really excited because we're bringing young artist training to Central Indiana with world-class professional teaching artists direct from Broadway. We are bringing Michael Rafter, who is a Broadway music director, conductor. He is currently the music director for the International Concert Tour of Tony Award winner Sutton Foster. He's been a music director of the American Songbook Series at Alice Tully Hall. He's done, as far as Broadway credits go, he mm-hmm. was the music director, conductor for Thoroughly Modern Millie, Sound of Music, King and I, Gypsy, Most Happy Fella, Sweet Charity, Swing, Les Mis. I mean, the list goes on and on. So he's coming in.
Mm-hmm.
We're bringing him in from New York City. And we're also bringing in Thomas Sabella Mills, who is the resident director and choreographer for Musicals Tonight, which is a wonderful company that revives old gem musicals. And he's been doing that for 15 years. He also has directed over 70 productions across the nation, including, and he was also serving on faculty for the American Musical and Dramatic Academy for 20 years. So we're bringing him in as the director of the project, along with Michael Rafter for music director. And then we've got our local talent here, Carol Roussel. She's been a director, choreographer. She's done countless things, including creating her own full-length ballet, Les Voyages.
Who are the students for this?
Students are age 13 to 18.
Okay.
And we're looking, previous experience mm-hmm. is required as well as a recommendation. So other types of intensives like this go for around $2,000 for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And ours is only at $400 if they get in before May 1st. Well, it's May 2nd now, I
mm-hmm.
believe. So,
When the show airs, right?
So right now it's $425.
Okay.
But it's an amazing opportunity for young artists. And we're only taking in 20 students.
Okay.
So we really want to keep
this very
unique. And because no two students are the same, so we really want to gear it towards them.
But parents and students can get information on your website about
how to
apply for this?
Mm-hmm. All our website, www.actorstheaterofindiana.org.
Excellent. Now, give me a preview of your upcoming season, because I'm looking at this here, and I know you've just announced it, and I'm seeing a show that's not a musical.
Oh, I know.
What's
How
up
about
with that?
That? Yeah, Actors Theater of Indiana is shaking things up a little bit. We're going to put a Neil Simon play into our season. We open September 13th to the 29th with the wonderful musical Always Patsy Cline.
Great show.
Oh, my goodness. So many great songs. 27 songs. Crazy, Walking After Midnight, Sweet Dreams, I Fall to Pieces. Wonderful, wonderful show. That's a great way to kick off our season. Then we go into The Odd Couple, and that's, of course, by Neil Simon.
Great play. How fun. We were just talking about Neil Simon. And it is. I mean, that's the type of thing with a Neil Simon play. You know, it's like the material is so rich. You can have so much fun with it. But, yeah, just so well written.
Yep. So we're thrilled to have our first play, starting to introduce plays into our
mm-hmm.
season. And then our third production is going to bring back that chestnut, A Forever Plaid.
Excellent.
January 31st to February 16th. That's just a great tribute to all of those wonderful songs, kind of like what we were talking about a little bit before. This is a show that Michael and I, where we met, we actually met in Las Vegas doing that show at the Flamingo.
That's right. That's
cool.
Yeah, we learned it from the original guys, Stuart Ross and
all those
guys. So we're doing that for our third show of the slot, and then we close up our season with Irving Berlin's I Love a Piano. And that's April 25th to May 11th.
Nice, very good. Sounds like a great season coming up, of course. Most importantly, keep in mind Sinatra. Gentlemen, thanks so much for coming in. Michael, great to see you again. Welcome
you
back
too.
To Indianapolis.
Thank you so much.
And Don, thank you for coming in today as well.
Thanks so much, Travis.
Travis DiNicola with Don Farrell and Michael Dotson from the Actors Theater of Indiana. Their production of My Way opens May 10th and runs through June 9th at the Studio Theater in Carmel. For more information, visit actorstheaterofindiana.org, actorstheaterofindiana.org.
Hey, Sharon.
Yes, Travis?
Welcome to May in Indianapolis.
Woo! Wait, no, that was more like Formula One.
No, that wasn't bad. That wasn't bad. But you know what? There are other things, shocking as it may seem, besides that big race that are going on in the month of May. We're going to talk about a few of them on that calendar we call.
What do we do? Woo! Very, very, very fast edition. Hey, there's a mystery dinner coming up. It's on May 3rd and 5th.
How do you know where it is if it's a mystery?
Well, I'm like Karnak.
I bet you know when it is, too.
I held the envelope to my forehead.
Sorry.
It's called May Day. The plane is going down, but don't worry because the pilot is very skilled. What started out as a routine flight to the Galapagos Islands ended in disaster when the aircraft was forced to crash land on an uncharted island. Due to the skill of the pilot, everyone arrived unharmed. After pitching the tents, one person is found dead, natural causes or murder. Wow.
Wow.
Very involved, considering that this is happening at the Propylaeum. You can tour the historic Propylaeum starting at 6 o'clock, and the performance is 7 to 10. Reservations are required, and you can dial their phone number at 317-638-7881, 638-7881. Or go to thepropylaeum.org. I'm not spelling it for you because you studied your Latin.
And you should know how to spell it. There you go. If you even come close, Google will find that one.
It's true.
Sharon, May 4th is a pretty big day. It's not just the Kentucky Derby, which is pretty exciting and always a lot of fun. Nicely done. You're really
cheap
good on the sound effects
tonight. Sorry.
But May 4th is also Free Comic Book Day.
What?
And yes, each year participating comic book shops all around the country and even around the world give away free comic books, absolutely free to anyone who comes into their stores. And they've been doing this for years. It's a very fun thing. The comic publishers and comic stores are all a part of it, and it's to promote comic books. So you know what? Maybe you haven't read a comic book in a long time and thought, you know, what's going on in comic books? And so there's going to be a whole bunch of free titles, everything from The Walking Dead and SpongeBob and Sesame Street and Superman and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Star Wars and Smurfs and Simpsons and who knows, much, much more. And Downtown Comics and all the other comic stores around town are participating. You can go to freecomicbookday.com to find a store near you that's giving free comics away on May 4th.
I'm just recovering from Record Store Day. My goodness, much excitement. Hey, speaking of, and this isn't a direct connection, don't send hate mail, but science fiction and fantasy are sometimes said in the same breath with comic
yes,
books.
Of course,
okay, there's a reason that figures into the plot lines of the Big Bang Theory, I'm just saying. Portal is a science fiction and fantasy book discussion group that meets at Glendale Library on the fourth Sunday of each month from 1 to 3, and they talk about a different theme each month. Some of the upcoming themes include alternate histories, stepping on butterflies. And if you got the reference, send me an email.
Okay.
Fun with gods and goddesses, divine beings in character. And one of my favorite ones, no offense, Travis, because you aren't included in this, but an upcoming theme, feminism and female writers, girls rule, boys drool.
No.
You can find out more by going to Facebook, going in that search bar at the top and putting Indianapolis Portal Science Fiction and Fantasy, and they will tell you more about how to get involved in that.
There you go. Something else that's comical, that would be one of the many First Friday openings on Friday, May 3rd. And remember, galleries, of course, continue to stay open throughout the week as well. But openings this week, definitely to check out What's for Dinner, a very fun, comical series of 3D pop-up art paintings by Tripper Dungan. This is at the Monster Gallery at the intersection of English and State and Fountain Square from 6 to 10. It's all really fun, sort of pop surrealist type cartoony paintings of food as characters. And these things are just hysterical, delightful. Check out the Facebook page for Monster Gallery to get more information on this, but it should be a great show. Also that night, though, the Conrad is having their first Friday debut of the Off the Wall exhibit, which is free and open to the public. And they are going to be featuring large-scale works by David DeTuna that that are extending from all the walls, as well as also sculptures by Dale Enochs. And then Indianapolis artist Constance Edwards Skopelidis is going to have some work up there as well. And so this is all part of the Conrad's First Friday opening. It should be a lot of fun. That starts at 6 and goes till 9 also.
Hey, speaking of hotels and art, I know you had done this a few weeks back, but I finally had the chance to tour the Alexander Hotel
in
Flat 99 with some great art, installation artwork, the birds made out of old vinyl records. Really cool.
Very cool.
Very cool. Don't worry.
The Madam C.J. Walker piece.
Madam
absolutely
C.J.
beautiful.
Walker piece made entirely out of combs. Mm-hmm. Very cool. So this is the new hotel down at South Street. Mm-hmm. And,
all curated by the IMA's Lisa Fryman.
Indeed, indeed. Let's see. You know, this coming Wednesday, the Ensemble Music Society is putting on its final concert of the season. They're bringing back the St. Lawrence Quartet. And they'll be joined by clarinetist Todd Palmer from Mozart's Clarinet Quintet in A Major, as well as a couple of other pieces, including klezmer music. So that's a lot of fun. Find out more at ensemblemusic.org. Again, that's this coming Wednesday.
Very, very good. Mm-hmm. Hey, and mark your calendars for May 17th and 19th. It's the Indianapolis School of Ballet. They're presenting A Midsummer's Night's Dream. That's the ballet version. That's right, because there's also Midsummer's at the IRT, which is running through this weekend. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of Midsummer's, enough for at least two summers or more, even a long summer. But the Indianapolis School of Ballet, they are doing theirs on the 17th and the 19th at the Scottish Rite Cathedral, and it will be a terrific performance. They're also doing, by the way, on May 4th, that's Saturday, 11:30 story time at Indie Reads Books.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Sharon, that is all the time we have, so we will have to come back next week for more things to do in May on that calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Longtime Indianapolis Arts Administrator Jeff Mays has deep experience as a producer and promoter of concerts and other events. He recently began a new chapter of his life as a booking agent for New York City-based Center Productions. Sharon was curious about the logistics of representing artists such as Bronston Pinchot and the Nelson Riddle Orchestra, so she invited Jeff in for a conversation.
So tell us what Center Productions is exactly.
Well, we are a performing arts agency, so we represent about a dozen artists or arts groups, performing groups. And my role as an agent is to contact presenters, performing arts centers, orchestras, music festivals, any number of organizations who book artists.
Mm-hmm. And in that world, which is mostly headquartered in New York City, as is your company, you just happen to be representing from here, there are how many agencies are there? I mean, it's dozens, right?
Oh, it's hundreds.
It's hundreds.
Oh, it's hundreds, yeah.
And so the way to be successful is to identify some kind of a niche?
Sure.
Or deliver extraordinary customer service or develop the relationships.
All of that, yeah. And I think some of them just sort of grow organically so that it's, and then others sort of do fill a niche. You'll see an agency that perhaps only represents chamber artists, so they'll have, and clearly that was a conscious decision somebody made that we're going to represent chamber artists.
Mm-hmm.
In our case, it started out with one artist who's Frank D'Ambrosio,
mm-hmm.
and it has grown through relationships that Frank has established. And so it wasn't necessarily filling a niche. It was more a case of, okay, we know this person. We know that they're a very talented performer, but that we also know they're a person who people can work with. And because it's it's on us if the artist shows up at some performing arts center and
somehow fails to deliver what was promised.
Yeah, and so Frank knows that that's not going to happen with any of the artists that who we take on.
Cool.
So that's sort of, and that was the case how his grew. I mean, I suspect others grow in different ways.
There's an agency for only mezzo-sopranos or whatever.
Sure.
Now, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but some of them are pretty specialized.
Some, yes, very much. Or, they might specialize in world music.
Sure.
Which makes sense, because that's an area that I really have next to no knowledge of. But if someone does, because you're spending so much time on the phone or in an email and not necessarily face-to-face, so you do need to be able to articulate about your artists. And, if we suddenly represented some world music person who played some obscure instrument or something, it would be difficult for us.
It'd be a whole new language, yeah. Center Productions is how old?
About 7 or 8 years.
Okay, and I noticed you have a really intriguing roster. Tell us about some of the varieties
sure.
of people you represent.
Well, it's kind of funny. I met Frank when I was out at Pike, and we presented him. And
that
would have been 2007, 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a relatively new agency at the time, and there were literally two artists on the roster. There was Frank and Jerry Sager, Jerry being a lady who was best known for Cats and Les Mis on Broadway. And so she had a sort of a female Broadway show, and Frank had sort of a male Broadway show. The last time I connected with them, I noticed on the roster that there were four artists, and they had added Glory Crampton, who is a musical theater veteran, and Chipper Lowell, who is two-time Comedy Magician of the Year. So he's just, he's the wacky guy on the artist on the roster. So there were those four, and it was four when I started with them last July. And so over the course of last summer, we added eight artists on the roster.
That's fast growth.
Yeah, Frank consciously wanted to grow the agency.
Yeah.
And again, these were all people who he knew in some form. And so we've added Brian Anthony, who is a big band singer, did the R Sinatra off-Broadway, and performs regularly with Tommy Dorsey and Glenn Miller and the Nelson Riddle Orchestra. And it was his connection to the Nelson Riddle Orchestra that enabled us to represent the Nelson Riddle Orchestra. They technically self-represent, so they don't really have an agent. But I have to take credit for this. I booked Brian at a performing arts center up in Michigan, and they were asking, Brian was with me when we were talking to the presenter, and they happened to ask, what configurations do you come in? And so we were telling her solo with piano or with a jazz trio, or we could put a big band together.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian sort of said, or we could get the Nelson Riddle Orchestra. And the presenter said, really? And I said, really? And he said, yeah, we can do that. So, and it worked out. They were, the orchestra was happy to get the booking and to work through us. And obviously they knew Brian. And,
sure.
So that got us
And the client's happy. The
client's very happy. Yeah.
Very, very, very saleable knowledge, name brand recognition there.
Yes, for the people who like a name brand. They wanted a big splash.
Sure.
The orchestra could have sounded the same if we had put it together, but that's not true, because the Nelson Riddle Orchestra has the Riddle arrangements.
Has a very particular sound.
I have to tell you, Sharon, I was on the web, I was like sitting at my desk or something, and I pulled up a sample of Brian singing with the current Nelson Riddle Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And then I pulled up a sample of Frank Sinatra singing, and it was the same song. It was I've Got the World on a String.
Mm.
The orchestra sounded identical. It was just the same sound, 50 years?
That's great quality control and careful stewardship of the charts. And
well, the band leader is Christopher Riddle, who is Nelson's son.
Ah.
So he brings another facet to it, because in addition to conducting the orchestra, he also tells stories about his father and Frank Sinatra growing up.
And
so it's a... It gets people's attention, when they see them.
Of course.
So we have several cabaret artists, Raisa Katona Bennett, who is well known in the New York area and does the whole cabaret shtick. I'm doing this from memory.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean you had to reproduce the entire roster because it's grown so quickly.
Sure. But. Yeah. Bruce Levingston is he's sort of the non-vocalist. He's a concert pianist.
Mm-hmm.
A great guy. He plays the gamut from classical through contemporary, but he's particularly interested in contemporary music. He is friends with Philip Glass, does a wonderful Philip Glass piece in concert.
Hmm.
So I enjoyed very much meeting him as well, because it's another case where you could talk to him backstage or beforehand or afterwards, mm-hmm. at a concert, and he's just a normal, ordinary person.
Just a nice person to do business with.
Tantrums, yeah. He's not complaining.
Demanding only green M&Ms in his dressing
exactly,
room.
Yeah.
So that brings me to, it strikes me that you're sort of the perfect person to segue into this role after having been a producer and a presenter yourself. Do you find yourself going, okay, what were all the things I had wished agencies knew when I was programming at Pike, for example?
Yes. It also helps when you talk to a presenter because, frankly, agents in the business are, and literally people were saying, oh, you've joined the dark side because you're now an agent.
It's like journalists who go into PR.
Yeah.
You've crossed over.
So there's a little bit of that. They're always smiling when they say it, so you don't take it seriously. But it does help to be able to say to a presenter, when I was a presenter before I did this, so I know what your concerns could be or what your interest would be, and trust me, you're not going to have and having presented Frank before, I mean, I can literally talk about Frank because I've worked with him and I know what he's like, and I think that helps. It makes the presenter at least feel you can talk their language and you talk to their technical people and reassure them that there's not a lot that goes into this, and yes, he'll do he'll come out after the show and stay until the last audience member leaves.
Aw.
Yeah.
So that's great credibility to bring to the table. So I know that lots of times performing arts centers, in particular those affiliated with universities, try to piggyback performances with someone else in the area. So somebody's coming to Cincinnati to appear, and maybe then they go to Louisville to appear, and then they come to Indianapolis.
Right.
So is that something you drive as the representative, or does that come up very often? Has it come up
yes.
very often?
In fact, you had asked me off here about it, I think, about it, whether it's cyclical or whether there's and it very much so is, and we're nearing the point where a large number of performing arts centers have booked their seasons for 13-14,
right?
So which to most people would be starting around August, September
mm-hmm.
of 13 and going through the spring of 14. So, and we're in that position as well. We have our artists booked at various locations around the country. And what we're doing now is getting back to presenters who haven't booked anything from us yet, but we've got Frank in the Chicagoland area for a couple of days or for one day.
Sure.
And now is when you really want to go back and see if we can fill in, maybe simply get him some more dates in the Chicago area, and then he can fly back home to San Francisco, or in some cases, it's okay, he's in the Chicagoland area on Friday, and then the following Friday, he's somewhere in Tennessee. And so you try to route him
from
Illinois to Tennessee with one or two, keeping in mind that he's not going to do five nights a week. He's still got to travel. And,
right.
And that sort of thing. So that's very much in play and very much driven by the artists and the agencies.
If a younger person who's considering a career right now is intrigued by all this, what would you recommend somebody study? How do you prepare to do you do?
I don't know. The only reason I say I don't know is I didn't study any of this. I mean, I sort of fell into the performing arts and found that, you know, one thing sort of led to another, and that's a good question. In fact, that's, you know, in some of these social media groups, those questions come up all the time. I'm thinking of getting into the performing arts, or I'm thinking of, you know, is an arts administration degree the
really
right
that
way
useful,
to go?
Yeah.
Is it useful? How do I get started with it? You know, I really want to go into opera administration. How do I get started? And you know, there's somehow...
Sign up for the pure luck or serendipity that led most of us to our current jobs, right?
Yeah. Or marry someone who's got a good job.
Oh, ouch.
Sharon Gamble with Jeff Mays. Learn more about Center Productions at centerproductionsinc.com.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. when I get a preview of the Star Wars exhibit at the State Museum.
Dun, 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 dun. I'll have a look at a new garden event.
And I'll chat with some of the people behind We Are City. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.